Hi, this is Jacob Scher. Welcome to the Job Mob Podcast. Hi, everyone. In this call, I'll be talking with Lindsay Pollock, who's a Generation Y career and workplace expert. She's also the author of Getting from College to Career, and she's also a LinkedIn campus spokesperson. So you can see that there's a lot of information, there's a lot of expertise here for students and recent students, recent graduates, I should say. Now, I have to say this call is actually, it's not very long in terms of minutes, but there's so much information, there's so many action-packed tips that Lindsay gives you in the call that it really feels like it's much longer than it is. So I'm sure that you'll enjoy it, and I hope you'll get a lot of value out of it. Excuse me, even if you're not a recent student, even if you're someone who has been in their career for years, there are a lot of tips here about also dealing with job search during recessionary times and trying different things. So I hope that you'll enjoy it. And as usual, I'll talk to you after the call. Thank you very much for coming on this call with this Job Mob interview with an expert. Two of the subjects that you focus on in sharing your expertise are helping students with their careers and also with helping women. Now, one of the things I really like about you is that you're advising from experience. You've been there. These are the things that you yourself have done. Now, you wrote a book called Getting from College to Career. So looking back, how did you make the jump from college to career?
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to speak to you across the world. And I think you hit on exactly what I try to do differently in my work with college students, with women, with anyone working on their career. And that's really open them up to all of the different resources that are available. And I think one of the mistakes that I made when I graduated from college and graduate school is that I tried to do everything alone and figure it all out. And the reality is you have to leave your brain and go out there and see what's available, talk to people, expose yourself to lots of different opportunities, check out all the resources. So I really learned from the mistake I made, which was trying to go it alone. And what I try to do is share that experience and help other people avoid my mistakes, but also learn from all of the resources that I've been able to figure out in the 15 or so years that I've been in the workforce.
And when you talk about those resources, so which were the first resources that really got you moving in the right direction?
You know, I actually worked with a career coach when I came out of graduate school, and she's the first person who said to me, you know, what's the best job you ever had? If you weren't getting paid, what would you want to do? And honestly, it sounds so obvious now, but at the time, I had never really thought that I could build a career doing exactly what I wanted. And my answer to that career coach was I loved being a resident advisor on my college campus. I loved advising other college students when I was a senior. And, you know, now it kind of makes total sense because that's what I do for a living. But I really, really believe that you can do anything you want, and there's always a way. So the career coach, who for me was a paid expert, for somebody else it could be a free career counseling session at your college or university. It could be a mentor, a family friend, an older sibling, but really reaching out to people who had more experience than I did. And beyond that, I got very involved at a young age with professional associations. I happened to join a couple of women's business associations. I was on a Rotary Scholarship, which is a fantastic international organization of business people, so they were very helpful to me. But truly, I think the first resource everybody should go to is your college career services center. It's open to you whether you're a current student or whether you've been out in the workforce for 35, 50 years. It's an amazing resource that most people don't take advantage of. And, you know, my deep, dark secret is I never walked into the career center on my campus. So, you know, again, learn from my mistake.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so when it came to that career coach, was this someone who did some sort of testing on you to decide in which direction you wanted to go?
You know, interestingly, I've done a lot of career assessment over my life, but this was a person who just talked to me, and everything that her philosophy was, you know, to get me to just talk about what I like to do and not necessarily use my Myers-Briggs testing or you know, brain indicators or skills building, but just talk to me about what made me happy. And interestingly, she really asked about jobs I had had. Now, at the time, I was in my early 20s, so I didn't really think I had had any jobs. But when you really think about your life, you've delivered papers, or you've worked at the school newspaper, or you've helped your dad in the wood shop in the back of your house, or in my case, I had been a camp counselor and a resident advisor in college. So you really do have a lot more life experiences than you might think. And I think career assessments are very valuable, but I don't think you should just use those and ignore your real life experience.
And so your experience with the coach, was this ongoing throughout your college years, or was it just a one-time meet?
You know, it was a gift from my parents when I came home from graduate school and was living in my parents' house, which I know a lot of kids are doing now because of the bad economy, and they gave it as a gift. And I think I had 4 sessions with this person, and she gave me a lot of homework assignments and great books to read. I found career coaches to be very valuable to me when I'm at transition points in my career, even now, you know, expanding my business or looking into new areas. So some people do it long-term. Some people find that 1 or 2 sessions is valuable. Mm-hmm. But I think getting that expert advice, and again, you can get it free in college, is just tremendously important so that you're even aware of ways of thinking about a career that maybe you hadn't looked at before that can really open your horizons.
Now, you mentioned that in your case, the career coach was a paid expert. So what about the college student who finds that they can't afford to go that route? What kind of resources can they use?
Again, the Career Services Center at your college or university or graduate school is always free, whether you're currently a student or if you've already graduated. There are also a lot of bloggers and authors like me who write career advice blogs like yours, where they're willing to do Q&A sessions on their website. So a lot of resources for short-term or quick questions. If you want something more ongoing, I would really recommend finding a mentor, a family friend or a relative or somebody you really trust who's willing to maybe meet you for a cup of coffee once a week and offer some advice. So go to the experts. You know, many career centers, of course, don't have the time or the resources to speak with you once a week, but they can get you started, and then you can look in your own personal network for ongoing advice. There are also a lot of terrific books out there that can also supplement any in-person help that you're getting. But there are so many resources out there for free. If you just go to Google and look at all of our websites, you know, I'm amazed at how much is available at no cost. And I think if anyone says they can't find it, then they haven't looked nearly hard enough.
Well, would you say maybe that it's actually overwhelming how many resources there are?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, which is why I think you have to find the people that you trust, talk to the people in your network, ask them who they find to be the most helpful, and maybe pick 1 or 2 websites or 1 or 2 bloggers that you read on an ongoing basis. And if they're not covering an issue that's important to you, then maybe you would Google that and find the top 1 or 2 responses of that type. But I think you're absolutely right. There's a lot of conflicting advice out there. There are a lot of different opinions. So, you know, of course, Job Mob and the Lindsay Pollack blog are 2 very good ones to choose if you'd like to commit to 1 or 2. But yeah, I think it is easy to become overwhelmed. So you have to, you know, talk to people you know and trust and ask them who they're reading.
Okay. And so if you're talking to people you know and trust, they can recommend resources. Are there other ways to find trusted, credible resources?
I always believe in talking to your own network. You know, you can certainly look at websites like the Rise Smart list of the top 100 career blogs if you want to go for the most popular. You know, websites like the Wall Street Journal career site is a great place to look for credible information. The New York Times career site, there are a lot of good resources. But, you know, always I think that the people you know and trust are going to guide you in a very good direction. So ask them first and then start to go from there.
Okay. Now, going back to your own experience, you mentioned before that you made a mistake along the way where you basically were isolated or you didn't feel you were getting out enough, perhaps. How would you find that? How should people today overcome that kind of an issue?
You know, in my book, I call it the biggest mistake in career prep and job hunting, and the biggest mistake is doing nothing. And I know it sounds obvious, but particularly in difficult economic times like the ones we're in, it's so easy to become paralyzed and think, well, there are no jobs out there, I'm not even going to bother. or, you know, I'm going to send a couple resumes from my email account each day and then, you know, play video games. And, or in my case, I stayed home and ate frozen yogurt for hours, you know. It's really hard. It's not fun a lot of times. It can be very, very upsetting when you get rejected. But I think you have to realize that, you know, and you hear this all the time, looking for a job is a full-time job. So go out there, meet people. I think it's a really good idea to have a 9-to-5 schedule even when you're not working. So go out, get coffee in the morning, or go to the gym. You know, commit to sending 5 emails a day to people in your network. Read 3 or 4 career advice blogs every day. Really build momentum, because I think people do the right things. I think they just don't stick with them. And this takes time. So send out the resumes, do the networking, get active on social networks like LinkedIn or Twitter. Go to your career center. Read career advice books. It all adds up. That momentum really builds. And the worst thing you can do is become paralyzed and give up. So it takes a lot of work. But the message I try to give in this economy is I don't think it's ever going to get much harder than it is now. So all of the tactics that you learn and use now in this job search are going to make you a stronger person, a stronger career, you know, success story, and any job hunts that you have in the future, you're going to learn a lot of lessons from this one that will make all the rest of them feel like a piece of cake. So take action.
That's interesting, because do you find that in talking with people, whether it's students or otherwise, that there is a notion of self-pity, like, this is the hardest time, why do I have to deal with it? It shouldn't have to be this way.
Absolutely, and I so sympathize with that. I mean, for years and years and years, particularly in the United States, and I'd love to hear your perspective, you know, on other parts of the world, but this generation was told, you know, all the baby boomers are going to retire, there's going to be a war for talent, you guys are, you know, going to be fought over, and the world is at your fingertips. Then they graduate, and they say, oops, sorry, worst economy, no jobs. You know, so I really feel that, you know, that they've worked hard, they had a plan, they did everything right. I just had a group of recent grads over the other day, and I couldn't help but think, any other year they would all be employed, and none of them have jobs. And it's really challenging, particularly with the amount of student debt that a lot of kids carry, with the, you know, the expectations that they had. This is a really tough time, and you have to get through it and, you know, find whatever job you can at the moment. It may not be perfect, but know that things will turn around. But yeah, it sucks, and I really appreciate that. Yeah. But at the same time, you can't just hide under the covers, because you have to stay out there.
Okay, so you're telling people, take what you can. What else should they be doing that's different in light of the situation?
You know, a lot of people give conflicting advice on this. My feeling is I'd rather that you're working. So I'd rather that you are volunteering or interning, even if it's not your dream job. I don't want your resume to be empty for this time period. And I think employers in the future are going to look back on 2009. They're going to know it was the Great Recession of 2009. I don't think they're going to be judgmental about what work you did, but I think they will be judgmental if you were totally inactive. And that could be, as I said, unpaid work if you can afford it. If you absolutely have to make money to put a roof over your head or to eat or to pay back your growing student loans, then work at Starbucks, work at McDonald's, whatever you need to do. If your priority is making money, then go for it. But what I would say is, you know, if you have to start in a job that's not ideal, be the best barista at Starbucks, be the best employee at McDonald's, rise up the ranks. That's the old-fashioned way, how my generation and older had to do it. There's no shame in that, and I think we got a little bit screwy in the past of thinking that, you know, recent college grads were going to be chief marketing officers. It's okay to start at the bottom. Don't judge yourself, but stay out there. And, you know, if your biggest priority in the world is to have your dream job and you can afford to live at home and do nothing, then I suppose that's okay. But the reality for a lot of students is they can't afford to wait this out. They've got to dive in and do something.
Okay, so someone takes the barista job or some other job that's not exactly on their career path. It's now a year later, and they want to go back. The recession is over. They want to go back towards the career direction they were hoping for. How do they make the move? How do they sell it?
It's a great question, and I think something I should add is while you're the barista or whatever you're doing to get by, stay active in social networks related to the career that you want. stay active in professional associations. So for instance, if you wanted to go into advertising, but you're working at a coffee shop, go to the Young Advertising Club in your city and stay active in that community. Join a couple of advertising groups on LinkedIn and stay active in the conversation. So you may not be making money in that job right now, but you're still considered part of the professional community. You're still building your knowledge and your skills and your awareness in that field so that when things do turn around, you won't be an unknown quantity. You'll just be somebody who hasn't necessarily had a job in it, but is still part of that community. And if there's any way that you can volunteer or intern, even unpaid, in the field you want, I think that will also give you a leg up when things turn around.
Okay. Now, for the people who aren't sure about it yet, how would you define Generation Y specifically? You talk about it on your blog, you mention a lot about Generation Y, you mentioned that you're an expert for Generation Y. How would you define Generation Y?
Generation Y is defined by the Pew Research Foundation as those who were born 1982 to 1995. You'll also hear often 1979, 1980 to 1995, but generally generations are about 15 years long. So that would make Generation X, my generation, those born approximately 1965 to 1980, then Generation Y, 1980 to 1995, and those who've been born since 1995, we don't know what they're going to be called yet. So, you know, generations, of course, are fluid. You know, if you were born in 1964, you still might consider yourself a Gen X. I think a lot of it is, environmental. I think a lot of Gen Y is characterized by technology, how old you were when you first had email, how comfortable you are with technology. A lot of the features of Generation Y are not necessarily related to the exact day you were born. So multiculturalism, globalization, the internet, a lot of those see as very characteristic of Generation Y. I tend to see myself at this stage as a Gen Y expert on that phase of life, which is college and recent graduates. What I don't know yet, and I'll give you the scoop, is whether I'm going to keep using that term. Somebody asked me if I'm going to be, you know, Generation Y retirement expert. You know, I'm not quite sure. But for now, it's definitely what interests me is that big transition into the workforce. And I think also, you know, to go a little deeper, There's a lot of evidence because Generation Y is about 85 million people in the United States, which makes them as big as the baby boomers. I just went to a workshop on Gen Y in China. There are something like 200 million Gen Ys in China alone. That's almost, you know, you're getting close to the population of my whole country there. So globally, this generation is enormous, and I think they're going to have a lot of change in how the working world is, how global relations are. You know, there's a lot of interest in the Middle East on, you know, this next generation coming up and how they're going to see world affairs. So I think we're really seeing a changing of the guard in terms of who's going to be running the world. And here in the U.S., we have our first Generation Y congressman. It's a 27-year-old from Illinois. So they really are already in leadership. And I'm just fascinated to see the baby boomer guard kind of turn over and the next generation come up. So I think it's both age and also mentality.
And how do you see Generation Y-ers, I guess, taking on the recession aside, how do you see the Generation Y-ers going into the job search as opposed to other generations?
You know, I heard someone make a comment which I think really sums it up. They said, you know, Generation Y wants the same things that every other generation has wanted. They want good jobs. They want to make money. They want flexibility. They want to spend time with their families. They want to find work that they're passionate about. But for the first time ever, Gen Ys are willing to ask for it. They'll ask for extra vacation time. They'll ask for the corner office. They'll ask to get promoted on their second day of work. And they really have a sense that, you know, work doesn't have to be miserable. Work is a way to express yourself. Work is a way to do good. I think they really don't have that mentality. Work is called work for a reason. You know, it's supposed to be miserable.
Right.
I also think what's interesting to me is I think they're far more entrepreneurial. I read a recent statistic that 50% of Gen Ys think that you're safer working for yourself than working for a big company. You know, they've been through a lot of layoffs. I think this economy is going to have a tremendous effect on their long-term thinking. because we no longer believe that you're going to work at one company for the rest of your career. And if we move towards universal health care in the United States, you no longer need your employer even for your basic health care. So that's a huge ground shift. I think the next couple of years are going to be just fascinating to see how this affects the workplace, because Gen Ys are not going to stand for what previous generations accepted.
Now, one of the things I've noticed in the past few years is that people have been spending less time at each job. Do you think that's related to what you just said about the entrepreneurship and the differences among the generations?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's tied to a lot of things. I think it's tied to companies doing more downsizing, you know, and quote, right-sizing, in the way they're much more interested in you know, shareholders rather than employees, which I know is a political statement, but I feel pretty strongly that companies are not very loyal to their employees, you know. I think it's also related to globalization and outsourcing. So companies are willing to outsource things to other countries rather than keeping people employed at home. Mm-hmm. I think it has to do with more women in the workplace, more diversity in the workplace of people who might want to take time off to raise children, people wanting to go and live around the world. I think you have a whole lot of factors all coming together. But I don't see it ever changing back to the old way. I think, you know, people just have absolutely lost the belief that you could work at the same place. I also think lifespans are different. You know, it used to be that you would, you know, retire at 62 and you were dead by the time you were 65. I hate to be crass, but that was the lifespan, right? And now you have Generation Y is projected to live until the age of 110 on average. So, you know, if you're going to work, and that's why I think we see kids who don't, you know, who spend their 20s, they call it the Odyssey years. They spend their 20s trying things out, kind of settle in their 30s. They're getting married later. They're settling into jobs later. They're living longer. So the thought of a 70-year career at a company is mind-boggling. You know, I mean, it just won't happen. So, you know, you can tell I'm just fascinated by this stuff, because it's just completely changing what we came to think of as, quote, normal society is just totally different.
Now, you mentioned before that you were at a workshop recently where you talked about Generation Y, and this was in China, or was this about, it was a workshop about China?
I wish. It was a workshop about China. I was not, okay. I was not in China. But you know what else is interesting, and, you know, especially because I know that you have a very, you know, you have an international perspective, is, you know, I don't think that they talked about baby boomers in China. They didn't talk about baby boomers in France. You know, this was sort of a very American phenomenon, but you're really hearing this Generation Y term, as far as I can tell, and in my research, all over the world. Are you hearing it in Israel?
Not so much, actually. No, it's not so much. It's more. There's no question that a lot of the the points or the characteristics, rather, of Generation Y can definitely be seen here, but that term per se is not actually being used locally in the non-English speakers and the native speakers, the Israelis. The people who have come to Israel from abroad, specifically from the US or from Canada, yes, they are familiar with the terms and they do use these terms. But aside from people hearing it on TV, it's not something that's really entered the vernacular.
Oh, it's interesting. I'll have to come over there. Spread the word. But, you know, I wonder if we even saw the characteristics before. It's just, you know, with the internet, things spread so quickly that you're seeing a real global phenomenon that wasn't really possible 30 years ago.
Sure. Okay. And so going back to what I was curious about, the China angle, is that even if people are talking more about Generation Y in China and elsewhere as well, now, do you see any differences among the cultures? How is there something that's common across the board?
You know, I can't speak from personal experience because I have not been to China, but this workshop I went to, it was hosted by the Center for Work-Life Policy, and there was a woman on the panel who was from China. And one of the fascinating things that she mentioned is the one-child policy, which started in China in 1979, which is just about exactly when we characterize Generation Y starting. And there's a saying in the U.S. about Generation Y that they're coddled or that they're entitled and that, you know, their parents perhaps gave them too much attention and self-esteem, which now in the workforce makes them want benefits and entitlements that other people don't have. What this woman from China said was, when you created a culture where you had children who were the only child in their families, she said that you created a society of what she called little emperors, where everybody feels entitled and coddled. So I think there's some crossover there in this feeling, not only of entitlement, which I think in some ways isn't so bad. You know, I think self-esteem is something that we celebrate, and I think, you know, treating children well is certainly something to be praised, but too much of that, I think, can be dangerous. And what you're seeing is not only that these young people are entitled in China and the U.S. and elsewhere, but that they're extremely competitive with one another because they're used to being the star. So I wonder how that affects things like teamwork and corporation, you know, corporate culture building, because you have a lot of people who are used to being special.
I was just going to say, how are you seeing the idea of entitlement going too far?
I'm hopeful that this economy will have an effect on that, because I think, you know, as a Gen Xer myself, I paid my dues. I had a crummy entry-level job when I started out, and I think there was a lot of value in that. I learned hard work. I learned, you know, to pay my dues. I learned perseverance, you know, not just for the sake of paying my dues, but because I didn't know a lot. I did a lot of listening. I learned to do some really basic tasks that I'm glad I had training in, and my concern is that if too many young people sort of, you know, jump over those entry-level lessons, they could be in trouble later on because they don't have a strong foundation. So I'm hopeful that one of the outcomes of this economy is that more young people do start in those entry-level jobs. They do learn those skills, which give them a much stronger foundation for later on.
Okay. And, I mean, a lot of those entry-level jobs, I suppose, are available on campus or in the area. What kinds of entry-level jobs do you find are the most, I'm not going to say sought after, but the ones that you would say are maybe teaching the best lessons to people?
You know, I wouldn't even go that far. And unfortunately, one of the challenges in this economy is that people who are further along in the workplace are willing to take a step back and take an entry-level job because they need work. So unfortunately, there aren't as many jobs as before. But yep, campus jobs, retail jobs, customer service jobs, anything that gives you real-world experience, I think, is valuable. And you hear a lot of CEOs talk about their days waiting tables or, you know, working at ice cream bars or anything, just to have experience with customers, with budgeting, with money, with marketing. You know, any work you do is valuable, and it really depends on what lessons you take from it. So the worst thing you could do is to have a job like that and kind of blow it off. I think in whatever you do, I would really encourage people to take it seriously and gain every lesson that they can.
All right. So Lindsay, just one last question. How can our listeners find out more about you and your current projects?
Thank you so much for having me. My website is lindseypollack.com, LindseyPollack. And I invite people also to find me on websites like LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.
Terrific. Thank you so much, Lindsay. I know that people are going to love this conversation.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Hi again. I hope that you enjoyed that interview, and I hope that you got as much value out of it as Lindsay and I were hoping that you would. If you'd like to find out more information about Lindsay, the best place to do that is on her blog, which is at www.lindseypollack.com, LindseyPollack.com, where you can also find a link to her book. If you'd like other Job Mob podcasts after enjoying this one, then the best place to find those is at jobmob.co.il/podcasts, PODCASTS. Thanks again for listening, and I'll talk to you again soon. Bye now.